We want information. Information. Information.
Who are you?
The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Chapters 18 through 21 of the late Maureen Heaton's unpublished manuscript entitled The Impossible Dream. Once again, this comes highly recommended from the Izzerbeets, Charlotte Izzerbeet and Sam Izzerbeet, her son. They run the website deliberatedumbingdown.com and americandeception.com, where this manuscript can be found in PDF form. It was published, or it wasn't published, it was finished, at least, in 1990. And it has, Maureen Heaton was very prescient. She foretold many things that we are living under right now, because she saw them happening, she saw them coming, she saw where this new world order, this new feudalism, as she correctly points out, how it was coming and where it's going, where we are now. All right, here we go. Chapter 18, No More Heroes. It is an American tragedy that patriots who can see that McCarthy was not what he was painted to be by the media are blind about the power of the press in other matters. The power of the press had been incrementally purloined since early in this century, but it was only after World War II that the educationists succeeded in capturing enough territory in the schools to begin general redirection of the thinking of Americans through the minds of children. It is difficult to determine the beginning of activation of goal number 7 in Eisenhower's program for transforming America's future. We'll see more of that in chapter 29. But there is no problem in documenting that it is now de facto. Combined, these circumstances have the capability of determining the course of the future through control of individual decision-making. Upton Sinclair may be forgiven some of his sins in consideration of his contribution to understanding the elitist takeover of the sources which supplied most of this country's quote-unquote news. Forgiveness for those who participated in robbing America's children of their birthright would be harder to muster. Prior to mid-century, emphasis in the schools generally had remained much the same as it always had been. Factual material, objectively presented, and individual responsibility and initiative as a foundation for responsible citizenship, quote-unquote progressive education, had had its foot in the school door since early in this century. But it was the disruption caused by World War II which made possible full implementation of mind conditioning of future citizens as they went through the reoriented schools so they would become good members of the group and follow the leader instead of striking out on their own with the competence to handle wisely the liberty guaranteed them by the Constitution. Okay, quick note. I myself need to put a disclaimer on this. I have been persuaded by the research work of men, people like The Informer and James Montgomery and the legendary Visigoth, who is in communication with them. I have been persuaded by these assiduous researchers that the Constitution was a fraud. So, and I don't want to put words in the mouth of Maureen Heaton, but just so you know, Maureen Heaton will be very laudatory of the Constitution, and boy, I would not be on board with that. anyway, yeah, boy. Mythologies, once they're established, and we are taught them for centuries as children that the Founding Fathers were heroes, stuff like that, is really hard to purge. But they were lawyers. They were elitists who sold us out. Go to ATG Press if you doubt that. Read the works of James Montgomery and The Informer before you make up your mind. I read them. I bought some books of theirs also and read them. I am persuaded. But anyway, Maureen Heaton will be, as I once was and long was, a big supporter, big promoter of the Constitution. I no longer am, but just so you know. Okay, back to the book. It was about that same time that American heroes began to be defiled and leaders offered as substitutes. Just when that campaign began, along came Joe McCarthy, with all the attributes of a real American hero. Destruction of an incipient hero was an essential part of the assault on Joe McCarthy. The build-up began for charismatic leaders. Dwight David Eisenhower, Adlai Stevenson, John Kennedy, and numerous other lesser acceptable leaders were given the red carpet treatment by the press. Charles Lindbergh, Douglas MacArthur, Joe McCarthy, and dozens of true heroes received the blackball. This build-up is a continuing strategy, exemplified today in the persons of Mikhail Gorbachev and Nelson Mandela. Attempts to quote-unquote create heroes were to fill the void left by the downgrading of the real thing. The 100th anniversary of the birth of Herbert Clark Hoover sparked one such movement. While it may be true that the nature of man insistently urges recognition of figures, quote, larger than life, unquote, as examples of conduct above and beyond the petty challenges of the workaday world, heroes of the past earned their place in history through some great deed or a lifetime of dedication. It wasn't even thinkable to, quote, build an image, unquote, as is now being done. As with Richard Nixon, Herbert Hoover has been the subject of dastardly non-relevant attacks, which are regrettable. As with Nixon, the attacks against Hoover did not aim at substantial targets, but were personal abuse and unwarranted. Like Nixon, Hoover gave lip service to the principles which are best described as quote-unquote Americanism, but which only served to shield from view acts which served another cause. While both these men gave it their best shot, that strategy came to its ultimate potential in the person of Ronald Wilson Reagan. In accepting hero figures, constitutionalists must determine that the object of their admiration carries the same torch which lights their path. Deeds, not words, are the guarantee of that. Some time ago, I attempted to demonstrate the steps taken through the years which have brought these United States to their present precarious position. In my research for that, I found little-known facts about Hoover's part in the destruction of basic American concepts already on the record. My study pointed out that President Truman had chosen Hoover to head his Commission on Reorganization of the Federal Executive on the basis of what had been done during the Hoover administration along those lines. It was Hoover, not FDR, who first utilized the concept of commissions, not only to study issues, but to set policy. FDR actually scored Hoover for this radical departure from traditional governmental procedures in kicking off his campaign against Hoover. This transfer of functions from elected representatives to appointed officials was done so skillfully that most citizens today are probably still unaware that it occurred. I know I was shocked when I first learned of it. In addition to instituting the beginning of quote-unquote managerial or quote-unquote administrative governance, Herbert Hoover initiated a technique of executive action which is at the heart of many of our problems today. It may well have done more to destroy citizen control of the government than any other single act of any single person. As an example, when the citizens of California took the question of the legality of the Planning, Programming, and Budgeting System, PPBS, to the State Attorney General, the opinion from that office stated that, quote, in the absence of denial by the legislature, the Planning, Programming, and Budgeting System is being legally implemented, unquote. What did that opinion have to do with Herbert Clark Hoover? Simply this. It was Hoover who conceived the plan, which has been described as, quote, putting inertia and indecision on the side of change, unquote. When the Congress, on the 30th of June, 1932, passed the Legislative Appropriations Act of that year, probably few members were aware of the significance of a section of that act, if they even knew it was there, which gave a new and dangerous power to the president. That section permitted the executive to initiate legislation, a constitutional and historic duty of the legislative branch. It allowed the president to propose government action which, entered in the Federal Register, if not vetoed by Congress, in the stipulated time, assumed the force of law. This was the beginning of the non-laws, now known as quote-unquote executive orders, and it originated with Herbert Hoover. And it was the basis for the California Attorney General's opinion on the Planning, Programming, and Budgeting System. While executive orders have existed since the Constitution became the law of the land, never before Herbert Hoover were they any more than housekeeping directives. This single act should preclude forever any acceptance of Herbert Hoover as an American quote-unquote hero. The courts have accepted this aberration as legitimate, even though it flies in the face of Article 1, Section 1 of the Federal Constitution, and makes a shambles of our historic system of representation. It is not, quote, unquote, pursuant to the Constitution, and its legal standing is questionable. It should also be noted that it was the, quote, Hoover commissions, unquote, appointed by both Truman, Democrat, and Eisenhower, Republican, which recommended the, quote, budgeting and accounting system, unquote, sometimes known as the planning, programming, and budgeting system, PPBS. If the legal government of this country is restored, some of the heroes for tomorrow's generations of Americans will certainly be found among the elected officials who courageously lead the way to dismantling this un-American system, not among the ranks of its progenitors. Chapter 19, Soviet Technical Superiority. There was a time when the motley crew in the Kremlin was recognized by most people as the gang of criminals they are, moral and ethical bankrupts, terrorists, capable of any bestiality in pursuit of power. How was it that such creatures became respectable, to be accepted as legitimate leaders of a large part of the world, parentheses, no matter the illegitimacy of the means used to extend the Iron Curtain, end parentheses, and feared for the potential contained in a war machine claimed to surpass that of the rest of the world? There are those still living who can remember the betrayal of Poland, the rape of Austria and Hungary, the freedom fighters in Hungary who were promised help from the U.S. and didn't receive it, the domino falling of Eastern Europe, the creation of the Iron Curtain. The celebrations here of the officially declared, quote, Captive Nations Week, unquote, and the protests over the first, quote, cultural exchanges, unquote. The arrival of the Bolshoi Ballet during the Kennedy years was a cue for Americans of every ethnic derivation to stage protest demonstrations outside the theaters where the ballet appeared all across the country. Other, quote, unquote, Americans, however, filled every seat inside, pushing past the protesters, casting disdainful glances at them, and tossing to the floor, unread, the flyers, exposing the perfidy involved. How could the ballet, relic of a great country, be accepted as representative of so foul a dictatorship as that in the Kremlin? That was a time when the United States had a war machine which, without question, surpassed that of the rest of the world combined. The ballet was a key element in reversing the American dominance in world affairs, just as, quote-unquote, ping-pong diplomacy opened the door to acceptance of communist China as a legitimate factor in the world community. These matters must be considered as the Carnegie-funded, administration-approved cultural exchange of teachers, students, and education is escalated, as USTEC, the United States Trade and Economic Council, increases its efforts to interface Soviet-American business interests, and as the official Washington-Moscow axis continues to discuss SALT, the Strategic Arms Limitation Talks, even while a, quote, kinder, gentler, unquote, occupant of the White House, proclaims acceptance of Soviet moves into democracy. The record shows that the succession of Soviet leaders since Lenin has been markedly deficient in any of the attributes essential to effective conduct of even the most mundane matters involved in government. In the main, they have been recruited from an illiterate peasantry. None have been, quote-unquote, intellectuals. Few have had a background preparatory to guiding even a local Soviet, let alone the course of a nation, much less to make decisions binding on the world. Certainly, there is nothing in the record to suggest that any of the Soviet brass possessed the competence necessary to mount a worldwide assault of the nature and scope which has occupied the Kremlin throughout its history. The record does show that Soviet technical superiority is a myth created in America and dependent on transfer of American expertise, materiel, money, and technology to the Soviet Union. The record also clearly manifests existence of a capability for refined techniques of strategy and tactics unmatched in history. If the power which exists in the Kremlin is not native in origin, what then is its source? Sounds like she's getting into Antony Sutton territory here. The incongruity of official policy of the United States vis-a-vis the series of scofflaw brigands in the Kremlin has been a continuing source of bewilderment to thoughtful people everywhere. Unjustifiable support by American administrations for and collaboration with criminal scum with an unbroken record of cataloged atrocities and a self-proclaimed mission to, quote-unquote, bury us, is unprecedented in history. An unceasing barrage of disinformation emanating from administrative offices in this country, transparently designed to rationalize such an indefensible posture, has restrained opposition, but fails to explain such policy. There is no solid foundation for belief that the Soviet goal has changed. There is strong evidence to suggest that another strategy to achieve that goal has been initiated. It is an established fact that Lenin and company were financed by a cabal of wealth headquartered in New York and London. Aided by the cabal, those Soviet radicals obtained entry into Russia, penetrated the quote-unquote People's Revolt, and subverted that revolt to another cause. That cause used the name of communism, but not its substance. Again, a variety of apologia tried to bridge the gap of credibility between what was and what was acclaimed. Before another strategic arms limitations talk round is ratified, that credibility gap must be spanned. Past experience demonstrates that such agreements only further jeopardize the capability of the United States to protect the national interest, and do not reduce Soviet capability or purpose. Logic suggests that the cause of repeated failure must be examined, past errors of judgment corrected, and more promising alternatives found. Such an examination might disclose that the participants in these rounds do not share the same expectations of the outcome. Or they might share the same expectation and it not be the one publicly stated. It could even be that a hidden agenda credits the strategic arms limitation talks' failure as quote-unquote success. To clarify, consider. Knowledgeable Americans are familiar with the presence in every administration here of an, quote, invisible government, unquote, which directs policy, foreign and domestic, to serve an international purpose. Assume, for discussion, that the present entities in that invisible group are the heirs and assigns of the cabal which financed Lenin, and that they have a goal which is compatible with the Soviet goal, towards which their efforts are directed. Assume that that goal is the establishment of an elite superstructure above all existing governments, through which control of all the resources of the world will be theirs. Suppose this cabal viewed events in Russia as an opportunity and Lenin as an agent to secure that opportunity for them. An agrarian society made rudderless by the coups and leaderless by assassination and or exile could be an invaluable acquisition to further their goal. A pseudo-government acting under control could conduct experiments not possible otherwise. Strategies, tactics, and techniques could be initiated and tested without constraints, especially if the whole territory was isolated from the rest of the world, so no knowledge of what was being done could leak out. Such a government could begin assimilation of contiguous countries and be camouflage for the penetration of others. It could claim invincibility, for none could prove otherwise. It could develop ways and means to control its people without having to answer to world opinion. It could be a center for training nationals from other countries in strategies of subversion, which they could use on their return to their countries of origin. It could send agents provocateur to other areas to begin development of the machinery for control, which had been proven effective in internal pilot programs. Of strategic importance, such a government could create the illusion of invincibility, since, because of strict limitations on access to its secrets, none could refute the claim that it was, or prove that it was not. It then could provide the impetus to induce free people to voluntarily unite in a quote-unquote one-world government under the threat of annihilation. What stronger stimulus could there be to that end than the quote-unquote either-or choice between an end to nationhood versus an end to existence? Faced with the ultimatum inherent in the threat of a purported Soviet nuclear capability, the world has been brought to the moment of truth. Will the strategic arms limitation talks be the catalyst to bring about quote-unquote coexistence? Or is it possible that the quote, friendly coexistence, unquote, will bring fruition to a mutually acceptable, quote-unquote, peaceful world, with a war against pollution replacing the, quote-unquote, perpetual war among peoples? Or will the American people demand that the administration now in Washington recognize that, quote, Soviet nuclear capability, unquote, was manufactured in the United States? Can this administration be moved to formulate a policy which recognizes that 90 to 95% of Soviet technology has been transferred directly or indirectly from this country and or its allies? Can this administration be moved to understand that a, quote, democratic world, unquote, of peace is an impossible dream, and that the peoples of the world will never accept the force which will be required to provide their goal? If not this administration, can the people elect enough true American representatives to require that commitment from the next? Is it yet possible for Americans to force those who hold the public trust to begin a real liberation of the captive nations, including their own, and start the return to, quote, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, unquote? Chapter 20, Tiananmen Incident. It is almost 40 years since Herb Philbrick, who wrote I Led Three Lives, and Edward Hunter, who wrote Brainwashing in Red China, brought to public attention the existence of a frightening capability of mind control. During those years, an accelerating intelligence of just how much a threat that capability is to the civilization the world has known has failed to create any organized opposition to use of such control. None of the reports out of China about the tragedy which occurred in Tiananmen Square have included recognition of the fact that the powers that be have used cybernetics to control that benighted country ever since Hunter first exposed its use to transfer China to Red Rule. The fact is that those quote-unquote students in Tiananmen Square have been manipulated since before they were born. If that does not make sense, it is because, despite the evidence, people do not recognize state control of population as an element of systems decision-making. Those quote-unquote students have been conditioned all their lives to do the bidding of their puppet masters. Their quote-unquote revolt could not have quote-unquote happened unless the powers that be, for their own purposes, decided it was needed. One can only extrapolate scenarios to suggest what the purposes could be. One such scenario could indicate a dissident element in the power structure aiming to establish a new international economic order. Another could be creation of a climate for change to expedite that new international economic order. Others can be constructed. While this is important, it pales in significance when juxtaposed against the fact that there has been no public recognition of the use of systematic control as the causative factor underlying what, quote unquote, happened in Tiananmen Square. There will never be an effective resistance to the world revolution now speeding toward finalization unless systematic capability is factored in to any effort to counter it. Chapter 21. In the name of, quote unquote, democracy. This opens up with three lovely little quotes from V.I. Lenin. 1. Quote, as regards the national question, the proletarian must, first of all, insist on the promulgation and immediate realization of full freedom and separation from Russia of all nations and peoples who were forcibly included or forcibly retained within the boundaries of the state, i.e. annexed, unquote. Quote, the social revolution cannot come about except in the form of an epoch of proletarian civil war against the bourgeoisie in the advanced countries, combined with a whole series of democratic and revolutionary movements, including movements for national liberation in the undeveloped, backward, and oppressed nations, unquote. Quote, just as mankind can achieve the abolition of classes by passing through the dictatorship of the proletariat, so mankind can achieve the inevitable merging of nations only by passing through the transition period of complete liberation of all oppressed nations, unquote. And that was Vladimir Lenin. Wow. Imagine that. At the turn of the 20th century, Vladimir Lenin was talking about the inevitable merging of nations. Tell me that Lenin was not in on the New World Order plot with the bankers at the turn of the 20th century. There you go, folks. He was their puppet. And by the way, as Anthony Sutton documents, the Red Cross was perverted into being used for that goal. A man named Raymond Robbins. Anthony Sutton notes that Raymond Robbins, there was one man that Lenin always had time to see, and that was Raymond Robbins of the Red Cross. And Robbins was doing the footwork, the legwork for the bankers, the Wall Street, Rockefellers et al. So he was the middleman helping to finance Lenin. Wonderful, huh? All right. So this is chapter 21 of Maureen Heaton's book. About 35 years ago, an expert on communist strategy and tactics wrote a book titled, quote, You Can Trust the Communists, unquote, in which the author attempted to demonstrate that communists had been very open in informing the world exactly what their goals and objectives were. The problem was that no one in authority in the so-called, quote-unquote, free world seemed to believe anything the communists had written or said in their instructions to their co-conspirators. The communists were only believed when they were face-to-face with those they were intent on deceiving. As the world is witnessing the present-day actuality of the, quote, promulgation and realization of full freedom and separation from Russia, unquote, of the captive nations, it would be the better part of wisdom to view what is happening under the banner of democracy in the light of the stated plan, planned strategy, and carefully developed tactics which have made these incidents possible. We ignore at our peril that the events being witnessed in the satellite countries are part of the Machiavellian plan laid out so long ago. When Lenin, Stalin, and company gave instructions on the various components of the world revolution, they were speaking to, and for the benefit of, those who were to carry out their schemes. It could be fatal not to recognize that they would not lie to their own subordinates on such serious matters. It is also perilous not to recognize that the massive movements being quote-unquote promulgated today cannot possibly be a voluntary rebellion against communism as they are represented to be. The most obvious evidence that this is so lies in the existing power to destroy which the Soviet hierarchy still possesses, and which it uses when Soviet purpose is served in so doing. If the power behind the communist movement were opposed to the, quote, whole series of democratic and revolutionary movements, unquote, it could put an end to them summarily. The record shows that what is occurring is part of the plan devised so many years ago. Okay, so Maureen Heaton there is talking about the phony Russian Soviet Revolution, whatever, in the right after Reagan's administration, you know, the bogus breaking down of the wall and all that. Remember the moment where where Boris Yeltsin got up on the tank and was the leader in reorganizing Russia into a democratic nation? Give me a break. They could have stopped that so fast. Come on. That was a psyop. Okay. More evidence exists in the mass use by the throngs of quote-unquote dissidents of the communist salute, the clenched fist. This is a recurrent symbol. Okay, so that was it. That's chapters 18 through 21 of the late Maureen Heaton's book, unpublished manuscript called The Impossible Dream. Yes, so she's covering ground that that ghost-written book by Pat Robertson covered. That book also stated that the Boris Yeltsin-led rebellion in Russia was bogus. I wouldn't trust Robertson, but I do think that that book was correct. And so Maureen Heaton would also. Okay, well, that's it for now. We'll come back to this book later. This is interesting. This is getting into some good stuff. And again, this is just for those folks who you listen to audiobooks sometimes. Man, I'd sure like to get a book like this from the library. It'll never happen. You'll never see a book like this published, much less put on audiobook, much less put in a public library. Good luck. Anyway, that's it. Over and out. Bye-bye.
If I told you now, if I could tell you now, would you love? If I told you now, I'll leave my children here. If I told you now,
this world is not my home. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. That's true. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world. world where my children have gone before. This world where my children, this world where my children, this world where my children have gone before. I can't live at home in this world anymore. I can't live at home in this world.
That is the way things are.